you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 135 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host, as usual. Today, I have a returning guest, Ross Alberts. Ross was originally on the show way back on episode 74. I think I mentioned in the actual recording of the show that it was episode 75. That was not the case. It was episode 74. We talked about using a business coach. He was one of the first attorneys that I had on who talked at length about how successful he had become as a result of hiring a business coach. And we touch upon that a little bit at the start of this episode, but mostly what we're going to talk about today is the unique strategy, or at least as far as I'm concerned, the unique strategy that Ross has adopted to build his practice, and that is through acquisition, mergers and acquisitions. He's actually acquires other law firms and has been successfully doing so for about 2 years now. So I thought it was a fascinating subject. We get into all kinds of issues and discussions, and I ask all my stupid questions, you know, like how much did you pay for a law firm or how do you go about valuing a law firm? You know, things that might be self-evident to other folks, but were glaringly not obviously to me. So I ask all those questions, and Ross is very, very kind to indulge me, and I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I did. So without any further delay, here's my friend Ross Alberts. Ross Alberts, welcome back to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be back.
Yeah, I'm glad that you could take a few minutes and be with us today. For our audience who wasn't with us way back in, I think it was episode 75, I might have to look that up. When you were first on, we talked about getting involved with a practice coach early in the process. For those listeners who weren't with us back then, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Yeah, sure. So sort of the brief story is about 2 weeks before I got married, I got fired from the law firm that I was working at, and I came home and I told my wife, don't worry, everything's going to be okay. I'm going to start my own law practice. And coming from a family whose dad was a small town lawyer in Vermont and used to get paid in like snowmobile repairs, she did not have a very positive view on solo attorneys and practitioners. So we went, we still got married, we came back, and I started my practice from my dining room table and was just running around trying to do what I could to make things work. And like we talked in the last episode, eventually I connected with a business coach, David Kelly, and the Growth Solutions team. And from there, I learned and embraced the concept of working on your business as opposed to working in it. And here we are today. Which, you know, we're going to talk about acquisitions. We've done about five of those in the last 18 months and, you know, have two different offices now. And I spend the majority of my time working on building my law firm. And, you know, my vision is to create one of the largest firms in the region that generates $150 million. And I am focused on that every day and try to do the activities that will make that happen. So that's the brief sort of story.
It's fascinating. And let me ask you just about that vision. How valuable do you find it to be able to articulate that vision in a couple of sentences like you do?
Very valuable. I think about it constantly. And I have read and have found from studying the most successful people in the world that they all had a clear vision and they took action every single day to further that vision from happening or to make it happen. And so, I think anytime you start a business, to start a law firm, you have to ask yourself, you know, why are you doing it and what is it that you ultimately want? And, you know, your vision changes. Can change day to day, month to month. It can get bigger and bigger. And what I've found along the way is mine just keeps expanding and getting larger because what was my vision, you know, 2.5 years ago is no longer the vision. I try to think bigger. So, I think it's important for any entrepreneur, lawyers. You have to have a vision and you've got to write it. I mean, I write it down every single day, $150 million law firm, largest in the region. And you know, it just reminds me.
It's interesting that it's so succinct and yet it says so much. I know there's a lot of us, and I'll raise my hand to say me included, that intellectually understand the importance of having a vision for what your business ought to be. But very few of us go to the process of actually distilling it down in such a succinct fashion as you have done, to the point where you can literally articulate it in a couple of sentences. And it says everything you need to know about, you know, where you're heading and what your plans are.
I think, you know, having it succinct and somewhat simple, I mean, it can be, there's more details to it.
But, of course,
you know, when you meet people and you tell them this is what I'm going to do or this is what I want to do, it's just a positive reinforcement of reminding yourself this is your vision. And the thing I've also learned too is communicating it to your team and your employees so that they know, you know, my job is not to answer the phones at the law office of Ross Albers. My job is to help create a $150 million law firm that's the largest in the region. And I do that by answering the phones and getting new clients in the door and scheduling meetings. So if you can, to me, it's a big problem if someone were to walk into my office and ask the front desk person, what do you do here? If they say answer the phones, then I'm doing a poor job of conveying my company's vision onto my employees. That's not their job. It's to further our vision.
You know, one of the things that strikes me as well is that, you know, the eye rolling factor. You know, when you ask somebody, well, what's your vision for your business or your law firm? And oftentimes, for me, again, I'm just going to only speak for myself. And somebody will say something, and my first reaction is kind of to roll my eyes and think, oh my God, that's way too ambitious for you. You know, it's kind of like when you talk to a runner and they say that my ambition is to run an ultra marathon, and they haven't started, you know, a program at all, but that's their vision. How realistic can that be? But, you know, in your case, it's driven your decision-making process. When you say, I want to generate and create a practice that's a $150 million practice, that statement alone generates an enormous set of tasks and objectives and intermediate goals and sets your everything in motion for you.
Yeah, I mean, it helps me on a day-to-day level remind myself, well, what I'm doing right now, the tasks that I'm doing right now, is this something that a CEO of a $150 million company would be doing?
Yeah.
Or is this a task of someone who, you know, maybe works for a $150 million company? And so I think it's just a change in mindset and a change in how you approach running your firm and having a law firm. And for me, it's the first step and most important step is having a vision. And then the second would be actually taking action, because most people have grand ideas that we're going to, you know, I'm going to start going to the gym tomorrow. Well, what steps did you take to make sure that you go to the gym tomorrow? And so it's the same with having a vision for your company. You got to establish it, write it down, know what it is you want, revisit it all the time, think about it daily, but then make sure that you're actually doing the things that are going to make that happen.
Yeah. Well, one of the reasons I wanted to invite you back to the program today was to talk about one aspect of your growth strategy, and that is you've been very successful at acquiring other law firms, other practices as a means of growing this vision of yours. What prompted you to consider growth by acquisition as a business model strategy?
It was one of the training sessions with my business coach, with David Kelly and the Growth Solution team. We sat down one day in our group setting, and today's topic was, you know, growth by mergers and acquisitions. And it was nothing I had really ever thought about before.
Really?
I knew how to do. And he said, okay, we're going to talk about this topic. And we basically spent an entire day, 8 hours discussing it and sort of game planning of the things that you need to do, what to look for. And he was the one who sort of showed me that, hey, this is how law firms have been growing for many, many years. And you can do the same thing too. It's just a matter of taking action and trying to make it happen. So it was in a meeting with our group session, 2 years ago. And from there, I kind of ran with it.
You know, when I have been in similar kinds of presentations or workshops or sessions like that, and this is probably, again, showing my weaknesses more than anything else, the thing that often comes to my mind is, well, that's a great strategy for some people, but I'm not sure that that works for me. So is there something that some kind of hook or something that resonated with you, just aside from the general topic of growth by acquisition, was there something in that process that resonated with you that you said, you know, that's something I could do?
I think it was partially a challenge from my business coach to say, you know, you can do this, other people do it, and there's no reason why you can't do it. So that, I think it was one, sort of being challenged by him. And I think it was two, also sort of understanding that in order to grow the type of organization that I want, I'm going to have to do it through and with other people. And one way to do that is to go out and acquire them and merge with them and bring them into my practice.
Now, did that mean that you moved away from other types of growth strategies?
No. God, no. I mean, it's a full...
So it's just one of the arrows in your quiver.
Sure. I feel like I'm an attorney that just happens to be a professional marketer for a law firm and going out there and trying to generate business and things like that. So no, it does not mean that, okay, well, I'm no longer going to seek out referral partners, or I'm no longer going to advertise. I'm going to put all that behind me and I'm just going to focus on this. No, it's just another feather in your cap and another thing that you have to add to your sort of toolbox of ways to grow your practice.
So then, given that, what are some of the challenges that you face by taking that approach? I mean, I've got a million little detailed questions, but I guess, you know, at the top level, kind of looking down from 40,000 feet, what are some of the bigger challenges in taking that approach?
Well, the first one is that everyone, you know, from leaving that meeting with the coach, everyone's like, I'm going to go acquire a business. Okay. Well, what people think is that I've got one guy in mind. I'm going to approach that person. I'm going to take them out to lunch. I'm going to wine and dine them. And I'm going to say, I want to buy or acquire your business. And they're going to say yes. And it's going to happen. And I'm going to acquire a business.
I mean, it works just like that.
And that is how everybody thinks it works, including myself. I mean, I thought it worked the same way too. And what I found was that that's totally not how it works. And it's just like building a referral relationship with people and getting referrals, is you have to have a huge pipeline of people that you are reaching out to about acquiring their practice. And I mean hundreds of people. Because if you approach one person, you're going to be told no. And then you're just going to decide, well, I tried acquiring somebody. He said no, it just didn't work out. I get more no's or no response at all. But if my pipeline is 500 law firms that I've reached out to, my chances are much greater that I will find people. And that's how what I've found is, you know, from the top-down approach is everyone will listen to this or think, well, I'll just go approach Tom down the street and he'll say yes. Okay, well, even if he does say yes, you haven't even had the hard conversations about money. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to get past that. And so what I learned is that it is a activity that you must do every single day. You got to continue to fill your pipeline. I'm constantly looking for firms and people who I think I can approach. And from there, you know, it takes many, many conversations to get them to say yes. Yeah. In fact, another sort of education in my merger and acquisition strategy was I read an article in I-95 Business Magazine. I think a friend of mine sent me a link, and it was about Chip Lewis and PSA, which is an insurance, I think, you know, financial company that's very big and aggressive in growth. And he talked about acquisitions. He says it takes him 10 to 12 meetings with people before they will say, yes, I will become part of your business. And so I was sitting there thinking to myself, gosh, I've been doing this for 90 days and I've only had one meeting with one person. I still got 11 more meetings to go. And so that's what I've sort of taken away from it is that you have to be relentless and you have to have a large pipeline and you have to constantly be asking and reminding people that this is what you're trying to do.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight. Daylight is the Mac CRM and case management tool I've been using for years to manage my practice. If you're feeling swamped trying to keep track of cases and clients, but you don't want to pay the hefty price tag of something like Salesforce or other legal-specific tools, I recommend you give Daylight a look. Daylight helps me prioritize my day. It helps me keep track of my clients, cases, documents, emails, calendars, to-dos, and reminders, all in one place. The case management part of Daylight makes it really easy to organize all the details and work for each case so things are done on time. The best part of Daylight is that it lets you work offline. You don't need an internet connection to pull up case details or info about a client like with other CRMs and case management tools. And new in Daylight is their Zapier integration, so you can automate things like pulling new leads from a contact form on your website right into Daylight. And for techies like me, you know that integration with tools like Zapier is really fundamental to making something like Daylight work the way you want it to work. So to learn how Daylight can help you grow your practice, visit marketcircle.com/daylight. And be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first month subscription. That's Daylight by Market Circle. The legal environment is more competitive than ever, and small law firms are feeling the pinch. With over 1.3 million attorneys in the United States and counting, it can be hard to stand out from the crowd. And that's why Spotlight Branding helps lawyers become unforgettable. Spotlight Branding is a different kind of internet marketing company. They don't put their clients on the SEO hamster wheel, and they don't ask them to burn thousands of dollars on speculative pay-per-click advertising. Instead, they're focused on the fundamentals of legal marketing that have worked for dozens upon dozens of years. They use the internet to build a premium brand for solo and small firm lawyers like myself, and they put systems in place to create top-of-mind awareness, allowing their clients to maximize the referrals and repeat business. It's the smart way to grow your law firm. To get more information, visit spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur, and receive a special gift from our friends there at Spotlight Branding. Spotlight Branding, helping lawyers become unforgettable. Okay, well, so that begs the question then, how do you get 500 firms to enter the pipeline? How do you go about, you know, just inquiring whether or not, you know, a solo practice or a small firm practice might be amenable to being acquired?
Sure. I'll tell you exactly what I did. And I have no qualms about saying this because I know no one else will go and spend the time to do it because it was time consuming. Mm. There's a website called Avvo. Sure. You can sort lawyers by the type of law they do. So I sorted by personal injury. And then you can rank them by the year that they were admitted to the bar. And so I started from the oldest and I went to the youngest and I went through every single lawyer in Maryland and reached and sent and tried to identify who I thought would be a good potential target for me to acquire. I then sent them an email. I then, as I started to acquire businesses, would send them another email to remind them that I've just done it and try to gain some momentum. And so I must have spent many, many hours doing that. Yeah. And now when I see, you know, invitations to parties or invitations to this marketing event or invitations to that, I'm looking at the email list to see what lawyers are in there. And I'm looking them up and I'm trying to figure out, are they part of a very, very large firm? Or is this like a solo practitioner that maybe someone I could approach? And so, I mean, it's a grind. It's just grinding it away and looking for them. I mean, they're out there and you can find them and you can find their contact information and you can reach out to them. But like I said before, you know, you could reach out to hundreds and maybe 10% of that will actually get back to you.
Yeah. So the key is, I mean, the information is there and the targets can be identified, but it's the hard work of following up once you do the identification and having a plan for that follow-up. You just can't, I'm guessing, you just can't put them on your list and kind of wing it in terms of how you're going to communicate with them and what you're going to say.
No, I mean, you have to leverage your other relationships with people. Maybe somebody knows that person and you can say, well, what do you know about them? Can you give me some intel? Oh, yeah, they're retiring. Or that'd be a good fit. Let me make an introduction. I mean, my first acquisition was because of leveraging a relationship where someone told me, hey, I think this would be a good opportunity for you. And, you know, sure enough, it ran the whole timeline of an acquisition. It took about five meetings to get to a yes over the course of 6 months. So you have to have a pipeline. You have to constantly be adding to it, and you have to leverage your relationships with other people.
Now, you said that you started off by going on Avvo and generating a list of personal injury attorneys in Maryland. What was that specific because you were a personal injury firm and you wanted to expand in that area, or is there some other characteristic that you were looking for?
I mean, my firm is probably primarily now personal injury, so it just was a natural fit. It's I think it's easier to acquire something that you're obviously familiar with.
Yeah, at least certainly to start with.
So that, you know, that's kind of where I started. But, you know, from there, what personal injury, a lot of solo practitioners, they do criminal, they do PI, they do estate planning. They sort of dabble in all of those kind of areas of law. So for me, PI was just an easy first search to do. And that's why I chose that area.
Mm-hmm. Now, is there something in particular about these firms that you're looking for as a target possibility? Are you looking for a particular characteristic or situation or level of competence or just what exactly? I mean, you get the list, but what makes you qualify them to start moving them through that acquisition funnel?
Well, I guess it's really two parts. For an acquisition, for me, the ones that I've found, not necessarily to say to be the easiest, or your older attorneys who are nearing the age of retirement or are winding down their practice or are slowing down or don't want to practice as much. So I primarily was looking for older attorneys, older solo attorneys or attorneys who might be in a two-man, you know, practice, yeah. Them and a partner.
Yeah, and that's why you sorted it by age.
Exactly. I wasn't necessarily looking for like the 85-year-old of counsel at this white collar firm in Washington, D.C. Like, right. they're not to be acquired. Okay. So I was looking for that. And then I was also looking sort of in the reverse at younger attorneys who, like myself, had just maybe started a practice, say they're a couple of months or maybe a year or two into it. And perhaps I could entice them to want to be a part of a bigger vision and a bigger organization. And perhaps, you know, they had not committed to hiring a business consultant, but I could tell them, well, what if I paid for you to go to the business consultant and you became part of my firm. And so I sort of would looking for those type of characteristics, the younger attorneys who maybe were just starting out, who I thought I could really help and want to be part of a larger organization. And then older attorneys who were winding down. And also, you know, I just through putting it out there, I was finding attorneys as well who maybe weren't necessary, maybe probably had another 5-10 years, if not longer, to practice, but health reasons caused them to not be able to practice anymore. And all of a sudden, they've got all these clients, and instead of just firing them and saying, sorry, I don't practice law anymore, I would say, well, I could, what if I told you I could take on those clients for you? So that was sort of my criteria, older attorneys nearing the age of retirement and younger attorneys who could understand and want to be part of my vision.
You know, I don't know if you did this by design or if it just fell into place this way, but I think that addresses three of the Achilles heels that I think solo and small firm practitioners have, even though we only have 2 feet. Let's say we have 3 Achilles heels. So many of us, again, I'm going to count myself in that group. So many of us don't have an exit strategy. Don't know what we're going to do. We're going to practice until we don't practice anymore. But then what are we going to do? And I've seen that in particular with attorneys who have children who become attorneys and maybe even work in the firm. Do they think they're going to turn the firm over to their child, but they're not entirely sure, and they just haven't given any thought. So that's one area. The other one is that not everybody starts, or very few attorneys start their firm with the idea of growing it to a point where they can sell it. Now, that's true in other entrepreneurial endeavors. You'll see entrepreneurs in all other kinds of businesses start a business with the sole idea that I'm going to grow it to the point that it becomes attractive enough to sell to somebody else, and then I'll start, another one. And then thirdly, again, like the first one, exit strategy, we often as an industry don't pay enough attention to what happens if I get ill. What happens if I succumb to a catastrophic injury or illness? Who is going to take over my practice, or how is that going to work? So I think those are, ironically, the three kinds of scenarios that lend themselves directly to your target acquisition model.
Oh, absolutely. And I would say for the illness area, yeah, that's, I have, acquired those types of situations and practices. I, as terms of an exit strategy, most, lawyers, right? I remember on law school, first day of law school, they told me, I think, lawyers don't retire, they die. Meaning yeah. you'll just work forever. Yeah. So not, really, people don't really think about that, but also, selling your practice. The problem I've found, and it's with a lot of professionals and people that own businesses, and it goes back to something David, my coach, told me the first day I met him. He said, "Ross, you're just an employee of a law firm that happens to be named after you," and he was absolutely correct. And I think you could probably look at most solos, most smallish firms, and most of the lawyers that quote unquote own it are really just employees of a law firm that happens to be named after them. So what value is there really in selling your firm if you're really just an employee? I can tell you, in my experience, having spoken to attorneys who value their practice in millions of dollars and wanting to be paid millions of dollars for their practice, I'm not interested in paying millions of dollars for somebody's job.
Yeah,
I'd be interested in paying that for an organization that ran independent of whether or not that person was there or not. And so those are the things that I've learned and I certainly think about as I try to implement the stuff to create my vision. It's not my vision to be grinding out the work of a $150 million law firm. It's my vision to be leading an organization and creating jobs for people that want to be a part of it. So yeah, you're absolutely right. Those three scenarios, yeah. I see them all the time.
And it begs really kind of the next question. And That is, I would have no idea, if I were in your shoes, how to structure a deal.
Yeah, neither did I. me neither.
I think part of that is the correlated question is, how do I value a practice?
Yeah, well, call it, it's another thing I learned too. So you approach somebody and I want to buy your practice or I want to acquire it. I need you to send me your P&Ls, that's profit and loss statements for the last 2 to 3 years.
No, wait a second. I don't really keep an accounting like that.
Yeah, and then people look at and then people look at me like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Let me follow up with my accountant. And you're like, and I'm just like, oh my gosh. And full disclosure, you know, I've just recently become very much mindful of that and the importance of that as I've acquired businesses and studying it every month and understanding where the money goes and where it comes from. I look at it and take their revenue of the last, 1 to 2 to 3 years. And, you know, they're probably going to make that much money each year. And then it becomes a structure of, well, is that person just going to become an employee of the firm that I'm going to pay them a salary and then bonuses based on targets that I set for them? Or am I just going to pay them a percentage of what their firm can, you know, generate for me or what I can generate out of their cases for them? So it's funny that you mentioned, well, I wouldn't even know how to structure that or do that. And I can tell you, I didn't really either. But I didn't let that hold me back because, to your point, well, I wouldn't know how to do that. And that's why people don't necessarily pursue it, because they think, well, it must be some complicated thing. And in reality, I've found that it doesn't have to be. It really doesn't have to be.
Support for today's episode comes from Ruby Receptionists, dedicated to helping you grow your practice one happy caller at a time. From their offices in Portland, Oregon, Ruby's live remote receptionists create an exceptional experience for your callers by answering calls live with your custom greeting, delighting callers in English or Spanish, transferring calls, taking messages, collecting new client intake, and much more. Just like an in-house receptionist at a fraction of the cost. For 15 years, Ruby has been turning rings into relationships. For more information, call 844-895-7829 or visit callruby.com/lawentrepreneur. I suspect also that it is very much dependent on the nature of the target acquisition, because, you know, if you're talking about a firm that has a single attorney, you know, they have a long-standing history in the community, they don't really do a lot of advertising, they don't really do a lot of marketing, they've been able to exist because, you know, they've done great work and have a reputation in the community, and probably stems back from 20, 30 years ago. Well, what happens when that person goes away? If they sell you their business, what happens to their business if they go away, if they're the primary source and reason for people coming there? So you'd have to consider that versus a different scenario where, you know, somebody maybe got sick or somebody, a younger attorney might want to become acquired. Now you have to look at their book, look at their business, and value it, you know, in a different manner.
Exactly, you really do. And, you know, a perfect sort of example is, you know, one of the first firms I acquired in Essex had been around for 30 years, was well known in that community. But it's sort of older. Two partners had sort of moved on from the practice and really left it with one partner. And this partner, great lawyer, fantastic attorney, brilliant, hard worker, loves being a lawyer, likes going to court, likes litigating, does not like running a business.
Right.
And
wasn't what they signed up for to start with.
No. And so all of a sudden the firm maybe is not doing as well as it had in the past. And so for me, that's a good that's an optimal situation for myself, because that's what I like to do. I want to run the business. I want to build it. And you want to go to court and you want to litigate and you want to manage and maintain the clients, perfect. Come on board and let me help you. And that's sort of ultimately how that relationship started. But you're right. Too many firms, solos, the business is them. They're it, right? Yeah. And there's not a whole lot of value in that if they don't exist any longer.
Yeah, they don't really have any equity in their business, right?
Unless they were like, well, I have a website that generates 500 leads a month, independent of me sitting there answering the phone every single day. Okay, well, there is some value there. But if it's, you know, well, I'm John Smith and I'm going to retire and go away, then it can become less valuable. But I will say, you know, the most recent one I just did last week acquired that firm. Attorney's retiring, but his phone's still ringing. And I think we've picked up probably three new personal injury cases in the last 72 hours. So they do have value. It does exist. But the problem is people think that, well, someone's just going to pay me $1 million for my law practice. And I can promise you that is probably not going to be the case for most of us.
Yeah, well, that was going to bring up my next question. And without actually getting into real numbers and stuff, I mean, are you paying a flat fee for a business? Or are you paying it in installments for a business? Or are you forming a relationship in which you gain a percentage of that person's work, or is it depend on who you're acquiring and how the deal is structured?
Depends on who you're acquiring, how the deal is structured. Okay. But the two that I've, the most common that I do is sort of a percentage. You know, retiring attorneys say they have 100 active personal injury cases that they've been working on. Okay, we're gonna granted that we can get the clients to retain my firm and sign our retainers, we will, you know, reimburse you your expenses in the case and, you know, pay you a percentage that okay. we agree upon. But then
when those 100 cases go away, their income stream goes away.
Unless they're referring other cases to you.
Or stay on with you.
Sure, exactly. Right. You know, the other way too is to, if they're not necessarily retiring and stepping back, but are going to continue to work, we'll put them on payroll and pay them a salary that you can agree upon, and then show them a path to how much money they really want to make and explain to them how that's going to happen. And you can do that through incentives and bonuses and things like that. I have not paid a lump sum for a law firm. That's not necessarily a deal that I'm looking to do, because I think most of them just are, they're just unrealistic, and they really just don't make sense. Not to say that I wouldn't do that in the future. I certainly would entertain it. But for me, the best approach and strategy at this stage is either bringing the person on as an employee or just taking over their caseload for them.
Now, have you had anybody who's been offended by your overtures? Or
yeah, I mean, I've learned a lot. Certainly, yes. I can think of one individual who, you know, basically thought that what I was asking for was them to come on and mentor me and manage me and show me the ropes. And I had to kind of explain that, no, that's not what I'm asking for. Right. So I think the perception, you know, me being relatively younger is that, you know, I, not to say, you know, the guy in the first one I did, he's been a valuable resource and certainly teaching me a lot of things. But no, it's not to necessarily have you be the managing partner of the practice. You just have to be careful. You certainly don't want to insult people, and I try my best not to. Yeah. And, you know, most people have built, they've had successful practices, or they wouldn't be in the positions that they're in. But you just, at the end of the day, it becomes a dollars and cents type of conversation. And if the, it's like watching Shark Tank and watching Mr. Wonderful tell people that their ask is just absolutely crazy, and here's why. And I'm not saying that I would, you know, tell people to go take the dog behind the shed like Mr. Right. Wonderful does, but you know, you just have to be careful, and you just have to kind of ask what they're looking for.
Well, listen, Ross, this has been fascinating. I've learned so much. My eyes are really opened. It's it's a remarkable approach that you've taken. And I can just tell from my own observations watching you from afar that you've been at this just exactly how you said you've been doing it. I've seen that. I've seen your communications. And it's really kind of invigorating to see how it's working for you. If anybody in our audience wants to touch base with you for any reason, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
Probably via email. They could reach me at my first name, Ross, R-O-S-S, at rossalbers.com. And our office phone number is also 443-457-3890. And like I've said in the past, you know, one thing I've found is that if it's your vision or whatever it is you're trying to do, if you tell people and express to them, you know, I am wanting to acquire practices, you'd be amazed by what comes your way when you sort of put it out in the universe and tell people that that's what you're trying to do. So exactly. This is my attempt to say, that's what I'm trying to do.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to be with us again here on The Law Entrepreneur. And I look forward to visit number 3.
Absolutely. I got to break the record for most visits. Who's the guy that holds it? I was listening to one podcast. What is it, like 4 or 5?
Yeah, it'd be Victor at 5, Victor Medina. But so, all right. Little ways to go.
All right, Victor, I'm coming for you.
Thanks so much, Ross.
All right, take care. Thank you.
Once again, I'd like to thank our sponsors for today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur and welcome our newest sponsor, Ruby Receptionists. They, along with our old friends at Spotlight Branding, as well as Market Circle, the makers of Daylight, are the ones that make this podcast possible, and for them, I am very grateful. So please be sure to visit their websites. You can find the locations in the show notes for this episode of The Law Entrepreneur, or you can go to our website, thelawentrepreneur.com, and navigate to the resources page, and there you can find a way to get to each of their websites. So please visit their websites, sign on as clients. I'm a client now of all 3, and I think you'll be happy you did so. So that's Ruby Receptionists, Spotlight Branding, and Market Circle, the makers of Daylight.